emphasis in the Torah is "Vahavta Hashem Elokecha," to love Hashem, your God. Another one of the most important emphasis in the Torah is "Hashem Elokecha Tira," to fear Hashem, your God. The Rambam in Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah asks, "V'heichi haderech la'avasei v'yirasei?" What's the way, and what's the recommended path in which a person could come to fulfill these mitzvahs of avas Hashem and yiras Hashem? And the Rambam writes, "B'shoshi is boinin ha'adam b'maisav u'gruav ha'nefloim ha'gedolim." When a person contemplates the awesomeness of Hashem's creation, v'yira mehen chachmasei she'in la'erech bolei keitz, and notices the wisdom which is without measure and without limit, miyad hu oyev, he falls in love instantly. U'mishabeach u'mefoyer, and he can't stop singing the praises. U'misavet taiva gedela leida Hashem agadol, and he's overcome with a desire to know more about this God. U'mishamar David, like David said, tell him someone nafshi lelikim lekel chayim. So the Rambam says that when a person thinks about how great the Olam HaTeva is, thinks about, for example, a person thinks about how we have a machine inside of our head that can turn light into vision, turn sound waves into hearing, we have a machine inside of us that can turn food into energy, and all of the incredible ways that our body, just to take one small example, is able to function, we're supposed to be so overcome. It's supposed to be an incredible experience. And yet, we know that it doesn't really have that effect. Certainly not on a regular basis. And there's a very nice explanation. Rav Dessler, had a beautiful illustration that he used to try to describe this. So imagine that you're walking past a cemetery. On Main Street, if you go just past Jewel Avenue, on the left side, there's a cemetery. You're walking along past that cemetery, and all of a sudden you see on one of the graves, the dirt starts to move to the left and to the right, and then you see a finger poking out, and slowly a whole arm, and a guy, you know, pulls himself up and gets out of the grave, stands over there and asks you, "What year is it?" And you say, "Tashin Pei Daled." He gives a big yawn. "Oh wow, it's 78 years. All right, I better get something more respectable to wear." He Ubers over to the mall, and leaves you thunderstruck on the sidewalk, and you're very amazed that you say 78 years. He went to the ground 78 years ago, completely disintegrated, and this morning he just popped back up, like all chipper and ready to go. So that would be very, very amazing to watch. The funny thing is that every tree that you see out the window, every bush, grain, wheat, every blade of grass, it comes from a seed that went into the ground, completely disintegrated, became part of the soil, and then somehow decided to push its way back, it regenerated and pushed its way back up out of the ground, climbed through, and it was just the same process that I just described that would be so totally amazing if it happened to one of us, but it happens to vegetation all the time. And the process is no less amazing, and yet it doesn't really capture our attention to the same degree because, yeah, that's just natural. That happens all the time. That's the way plants work. It's not the way people work. It's not the way animals work. So we would be quite impressed if we saw it happen to a person or an animal. We're not so impressed when we see it happen to vegetation because that happens all the time, but it's the same process. So the difference, Rav Dessler says, between what amazes us and what doesn't is just what we're used to. And since Teva certainly works pretty predictably, so, you know, the Rambam says that the derech to come to Avas Hashem is to look at nature. So what am I supposed to do? Sit around and watch the grass grow? And that's not exactly an exciting experience. But that's why it's hard. That's why we don't see people falling in love every day with the Ribbono Shel Olam and overcome with fear of him. But when there's an occasion, that the Olam HaTeva is actually the leading trend on Google. The whole world is suddenly mesmerized by what's happening in the Olam HaTeva. Just this Bria that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, that's just working in its regular, predictable derech, and yet it captures our attention. That's an opportunity. That's an opportunity to be misbeinin, the ma'isav ubruav, and come to Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem. And today is a day that we could make progress in our Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem in one day more than you can ordinarily make in 18 years and how many days and 8 hours? 11 days and 8 hours. Today you can make a lot more progress than all of that because we're really focused. Because we're really looking at the Olam HaTeva. And when you're focused on the Olam HaTeva, on the perfection, on the way, the interplay, the way everything works out so perfectly, the world's design, if we're focused on that, then we're supposed to come to Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem. We can't focus it on it every day. Today's the day that we can focus on it. Today's the day that we can steig in that mitzvah, in those two mitzvahs. Now, you know, this is, of course, you know, Shiva came to me about a week ago, asked me to share some thoughts about the eclipse. So this is what I thought of sharing. And I had this ready even before Shabbos. And then, sure enough, Friday comes and there's an earthquake. Here in, you know, right here, where we live, right? Very unusual. I missed it, actually. I was on the road. Apparently, if you were driving, the other people also have told me that if you were driving, it's very hard to tell. I didn't notice anything. Came home, my wife told me that there was an earthquake. I said, no. It was just about, a truck, a big truck drove by, so it probably felt like that. But then, sure enough, I saw on the news that there's an earthquake. So my wife said, wait, you trust the New York Times more than you trust me? But now I do believe there was an earthquake on Friday. And so some people thought, oh, wow, okay. So, you know, they found the symbolism just like delicious, irresistible, that there's an earthquake that hit struck so close to the United Nations. And, you know, that was surely a message from God to deliver, you know, a stern rebuke to everything they did. Somebody else countered that, you know, actually the epicenter of the earthquake was closer to Lakewood than it was in the United Nations. Be all that as it may, what message the Rebbe Shlomo meant to send? I'll tell you the truth. The Rebbe Shlomo is actually very clear about how he means to send messages. When the Rebbe Shlomo wants to tell us that he's unhappy, it says in the Torah that he sends Peronis to Bnei Yisrael. So I don't think we have to use so much guesswork to think about whether the Rebbe Shlomo is unhappy or unhappy with Klal Yisrael now. But that's a discussion for another time. But the earthquake, I think, fits very well into this avodah that we're trying to do of allow the Olam HaTeva to capture our attention and our imagination, that we should sit up and take notice of this world that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has, certainly these two events right next to each other. I want to... The earthquake really brought into my mind another angle on this. A little bit of a different presentation. There's a Gemara in Brachas. The Gemara says that, you know, every day we say the Kippur of Tehillah LeDavid. Remember, we call Ashrei. The Gemara is supposed to say Ashrei every day. The Gemara asks, what is it that's so special? Because Gemara made a very strong statement. If you say Ashrei every day, you're Muftach Liyos Ben Olam Haba. What's so great about this parak of Tehillah LeDavid? Is it because the Gemara says there's a wonderful pasuk that Pesach Tadecha Maspil Chacharizan Hashem provides sustenance to every living thing in the world? Where is it? Big deal. There's another parak that says Nisin Lachem Bchol Basar Kila Elam Chastay. It has the exact same theme, and it also has 26 times that it says Kila Elam Chastay. That parak is even better than this parak. So Gemara says, no. What's special about this parak is that it goes in alphabetical order. Arimim Chalakayim Lach Bchol Yom Bchakav Gadol Hashem Olam Ma'ayid Seder Aleph Beis. Where it says, big deal, there's another parak that has the Seder Aleph Beis in a double quadruplicate, right? The parak of Kuf Yud Ches that has 8 psukim for every pasuk in the Aleph Beis. That's better, that's more impressive than Tehillah LeDavid. So where it says, no, but Tehillah LeDavid is the best parak in Tehillim because it has both. possess the nefesh bilchol charet zayin, and at the stage of the aleph phase. So that's why you should say it every day. And mutra chal yishuv in olam haba. So what's the inyan of chal the stage of aleph phase, and particularly these two milas together having some really really special impact? So this is a really extraordinary explanation from Meir Simcha Mashach Chachma that I like to deliver together with a story of Anna Stork, a very, very minor celebrity. I imagine probably nobody has heard of Anna Stork, but she had her day or two that she was in the news. I think it was 2013. She was trying to set up a Facebook account. And she, when you're setting up a Facebook account, you have to enter your date of birth. So there's a drop-down calendar, she chose the month, April. Drop-down calendar, she chose the day of the month, I don't know what it was. And then the drop-down calendar for the year. And she's scrolling down. But Facebook's drop-down calendar only goes back to 1905. But Anna was born in 1900. So she couldn't put in her birthday. So she sent a message, she sent an email, this was 2013, she was 113 years old. She sent an email to Facebook that I'm trying to open an account, but you don't have my birthday. So could you please adjust it that so that I can enter my birthday? They couldn't. They said they were sorry, you're just gonna have to lie about your age. She said, I'm very proud of my age, I don't wanna lie about my age. And so there was a standoff, she couldn't get a Facebook account, they couldn't change the program. But her next birthday, she was still alive at her next birthday, and she got a bouquet of 114 roses from Facebook in honor of her 114th birthday. That was the story of Anna Stork. What struck me about the story is that, that caught people's attention. It was in the news. It was actually very good PR for Facebook that, they sent this lady 114 roses. What's the godless of Facebook? Now, I'm going to have to adjust a little bit over here because I'm not so familiar with Facebook, but I'm going to substitute Amazon for Facebook because I'm a little bit more familiar with it. So somebody wrote an algorithm that allows this computer program to process millions of transactions every day, with each one, with an item coming from a different place, different sellers in different locations, and different buyers in different locations, and every item gets to the seller that it's supposed to reach, with payments going from many, many different banks to many, many different sellers, and every payment, every dollar of every payment goes from where it's supposed to be till where it's going, and with all of the courier systems that are involved. So you have the product, the money, the delivery system, the customer support, the return process. All of this is synchronized so that everything works out with each other correctly, and it could be repeated millions of times a day and pretty much flawlessly. And you don't need anybody that's actually processing these payments and purchases and deliveries. It all happens automatically because somebody wrote an algorithm that enables that. That's really amazing. That's an extraordinary work of genius. Now, occasionally, there's a glitch. There's something that catches people's attention, and they send 114 roses, and then everybody notices that, oh, wow, that's really cool. But, of course, that's not the godless of Facebook or Amazon. So the nimshel, of course, is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wrote an algorithm. This is what the Meshech Chachma says, that to send food to someone who's hungry, to send protection to someone who's in danger, that would have been easy. If every time a need arises, HaKadosh Baruch Hu zaps something here or zaps something there, that wouldn't be so impressive. But to write the algorithm, to set up a process from the beginning of creation, that man has all of these processes taking place inside of his body, man, and all of the animals that maintain life and all the biological functions, and at the same time he's interacting with, right, he's giving out carbon dioxide, and then there's the whole plant kingdom that uses that and the sunlight to produce the food that's providing for all of the beings in the animal kingdom, and meanwhile there's the meteorological system that's transporting water from one place on Earth to another place on Earth to water all the plants so that they're providing for the people, and you have the sun and the moon and the stars that are moving around in just the right way, held in place by the gravitational forces so that they're able to provide the right amount of warmth and light for the Earth to sustain life. All of these and many, many, many more systems that are dancing together, perfectly choreographed, so that everything works out just perfectly, and it was all done in advance. So Meshech Chochma says that the idea of the Seder Aleph phase is that it's all predictable. It's all cause and effect. The Seder Aleph phase means nothing surprising happens. Everything happens again. Aleph leads to Beis leads to Gimel, Gimel leads to Dalet, and without any intervention, without any miracles, every being in the natural world is able to get just what he needs, just following the algorithm that was written 5,784 years ago. That's the godless of this parak of Tehillim. That's why you have these two, you know, the Pesach Tzedekha with the Seder Aleph phase makes that into something which makes them move to Chalosh Ruben Olam Habo when a person says this parak of Tehillim David. So the, you know, when these events have there's so much to be misspoiled from in the Olam Hazeh, what we call Teva, right? The Nes that we call Teva, it really is enough to take your breath away. But you can't sit around all day watching the grass grow. But when these events happen that really command our attention, our focus, and we almost can't look away, wow, we're looking at the earthquake, we're looking at the eclipse, not directly, but we're certainly paying attention to the eclipse, then we're, if we process this properly, then we're steiging in Ahavasei V'Yirasei. Then we're supposed to notice the Chachmasei She'in La'erech V'Lei Keitz U'miyadu Oyev. Now, I'll just add a little bit of a halacha discussion that's relevant to this. You know, I'm saying that we should be focused, we should be attuned, we should be trying to experience it so that we can get what the Rambam wants us to get out of it. But it's 2024, and there's a psychological problem that affects all people that live in 2024. And that is that people don't feel like they're experiencing something unless they're taking a picture. And that's the mach of the Zdar, that we don't, you know, in order to feel like we were there, we have to be taking a picture. So there's something to consider over here. There's a mitzvah in the Torah, like Sasun Iti, the Gemara Roshana Daf Chaf Dalet says, and one of the mitzvahs of Torah is not to make anything which is a likeness of Iti, something which in some way represents the Ribbono Shel Olam, or is associated with, and the Gemara says there's five categories of this Isser. It applies to the Beit HaMikdash, meaning to make a likeness of the Beit HaMikdash is included in this Laisasem, the Kisei HaKavod, man, Malachim, and the astronomical beings, the sun, the moon, the stars, the mazalais. That's the fifth of these categories. There's an Isser of making the forms of any of these five things. The Tosfos makes one very, very important point about the sun, the moon, and the stars. The mashmaut of the Gemara is that we're talking about 3D images, sculptures. The Gemara talks about that it's boilate. But Tosfos says that at the same time the Gemara was discussing Rabbi Gamliel, or the Mishnah said that Rabbi Gamliel had in his office Tzuris Levana, that he had pictures of the moon, and the Gemara was addressing why was that allowed. Tosfos says, well, why don't you just think it was just pictures? There's no Isser pictures, it's only Isser on 3D images. So Tosfos says that's only true for the other four categories, the Beis HaMikdash, because they are covered, the Malachim, and Adam. But when it comes to the sun, the moon, and the stars, because the way they appear to us in the sky is two-dimensional, when you look up at the sky, you don't see the sphere of the sun, you just see the disk of the sun. So therefore, the Isser Loisasun Iti on the sun, the moon, and the stars is even two-dimensional. Even pictures is also included, so there's an Isser Loisaseh of making pictures of the sun, the moon, and the stars. So how does that affect the eclipse? Is it permitted? First of all, as a general matter, there is halacha l'maisa, that one is not supposed to make pictures of the sun or the moon or the stars on a regular basis. Meaning under ordinary circumstances. What about the eclipse, which is not ordinary circumstances, and everybody very much wants to take a picture? So there's two issues here. There's the sun, and there's the moon. So the sun, in an eclipse, you don't have a whole sun. The Rush says that the Isra on Adam is only if it's the entire Tzuras HaAdam. So some places can say that by the same token, that should be true for the sun also. The difficulty is that with the moon, it's clear that presumably Rav Gamliel's pictures, he was interrogating the Edim for Kiddush HaChodesh, he was dealing with a small sliver of moon. But there's a Malkum Lechalik that when it comes to the moon, even a small sliver is considered a regular presentation of the moon. But when it comes to the sun, a small sliver is not considered a regular presentation of the sun. So it's not considered, again, arguably, Rav Nissim Karelitz writes this, he says that he wouldn't allow taking a picture or painting a picture of a sunset before the sun goes below the horizon. But once the sun is partially below the horizon, that's no longer a complete sun. So he says that's not included in the Yisr. For a moon it would be Yisr, but for a sun it's not Yisr. So in the eclipse, obviously, the sun is not complete, so it wouldn't be included in the Yisr. The problem is that what's blocking the sun and making it incomplete is the moon. So maybe this should be Yisr on account of the moon, which is not in the hole in this picture. On the other hand, there's a makom to say, somebody mentioned to me, a svara, that because the side of the moon that we're seeing by the eclipse is the dark side, so to speak, it's not the side that we ordinarily see. And Tosfos said the reason why the Isra is even on 2D images is because that's the way we see it in the sky. So it sounds like the Isra is not dafka for the moon as it is, but it's dafka for the moon as we see it. And the moon as we see it is always the other side of the moon, the side that's facing the sun. The side that isn't facing the sun is not what we see in the sky as the moon. So maybe that's not included in the Isra of the moon. So this morning I was at a bris in Far Rockaway, and Rabbi Forst was there. He's a very chashuv paisek. Halacha l'maisa for over here. Certainly, I should consult with the Rosh Hashiva. I'm just sharing some thoughts. I went over to Forrest, I asked him what he thought about this svara, that because we're looking at the dark side of the moon, so that's not the moon as it appears in the sky. He said that he thinks that the svara is actually much stronger than that. He said, you're not seeing any moon. The side of the moon that you think you're seeing is invisible. If it's not exposed to any rays of the sun, it's invisible. You can't see it. All you're seeing is that there's a hole in the sun. The sun is blocked, so you're seeing a little bit of sun, and then in the middle of the sun, you can't see the sun. But you're not seeing any moon. So he thought that there's certainly no Isra Alta. He didn't comment on the question about the sun, but he said there's certainly no Isra Alta photographing the moon. And so, if he said, it would seem to follow that we've got both of them covered. It should be permitted to take a picture of the eclipse. Again, halacha l'maisa, I'm not passing it out, but just sharing some thoughts that there's a makom to say that it should be permitted, even though ordinarily you don't take pictures of the sun or the moon. But at an eclipse, it may very well be mutter, which, coming back to where we started, is a very good thing, because that is how people like to experience things nowadays, and we do want to experience the eclipse. We do want to have this experience of being so mesmerized by the Olam HaTeva that we just can't resist saying, being Meshabeach and Mefoyer, and saying like David HaMelech, Shama Nafshi L'Elokim L'Kel Chai.